Welcome to Kick-Ass Radio, hosted by Jo Sainsbury, founder of Kick-Ass Women. Join Jo over the next hour as she shares stories and conversations that are both inspiring and empowering. Having spent over 30 years in the corporate sector, Jo Sainsbury kicked off her heels and became a coal train driver working in the rail and mining industry. It has been her goal ever since to empower and support women who are considering a career change into an industry role, making the transition as smooth as possible. Jo is a walking, talking success story of how taking the plunge into industry can open up a world of opportunity. And you can do it too. If you're a woman working in industry or considering a career change, this is the radio station for you. Let's get into this episode of Kick-Ass Radio.
Hey there, Glowgetters. Welcome to the Kick-Ass Radio Show. Am I excited for today's show? You bet your kick-ass I am. Now, speech pathology for all ages. One of the biggest misconceptions about speech pathology is that it's a therapy just for children with speech disorders like lisps or stutters. However, speech pathology includes assessment, diagnosis and treatment and can be applicable to people of any age. Now, because the role of a speech pathologist is varied and often misunderstood, speech pathologists study, diagnose and treat communication orders, including difficulties with speaking, listening, understanding language, reading, writing, social skills, stuttering and using voice. They often work in a team with other health professionals to help people with a range of difficulties, but they work with individuals as well. And they help you to use and understand language, fluency, reading, writing, eating and drinking disorders and inabilities. So children and adults with communication difficulties may experience mental health issues and behavioural problems, have poor self-esteem and struggle to manage social relationships and sustain employment because of their lack of self-confidence with their speaking ability. So speech pathologists work with people, their family and carers and other professionals to explore a wide variety of communication and swallowing therapies. So in order to shed more light on what we don't know about the work of a speech pathologist, today we're going to learn all about speech therapy from our amazing guest, Jenny Matthews of Bayside Voice Centre, who is a next level speech pathologist and voice coach. You are listening to the Kick-Ass Radio Show Kickstart, where we talk about all things women working in non-traditional roles in varied male-dominated industries, and I tell you how it is. I'm your host, Jo Sainsbury, the Glowgetter. I hope we can keep you in good company over the coming hour. A huge shout out to all the women working out on track and on site today and tonight, all over the globe. May you stay safe and have a fantastic day or night shift. And this might also be a good time for a trigger warning that today's show may and does contain some adult language. Let's get into it. Hello, Jenny, and welcome to Kick-Ass Radio Show. Firstly, thank you for coming on the show. Thank you. Thank you for coming on the show and for sharing some of your valuable time with us today. I know you are super busy, but I also know that we are going to enjoy your company and we're going to learn, and we are eager to learn, lots of information off you today about how we can improve our speech. So to kick things off, firstly, tell us a little about yourself and your career journey and what made you pursue a career as a speech pathologist and like improving our voice and our wellness there.
Well, so just firstly, I'm a daughter of a builder. I'm a wife of a tradesman, an electrician, retired though. It's very hard to get hood help when they're in your own home. I just
exactly.
he works more in management. And I've worked as a speech pathologist mainly in schools for 20 years, but I've had this passion for voice specifically as a part of that professional field. And the last few years I have branched out into my own private practice, supporting people with sore and husky voices who might be talking over lots of background noise on their work site and might have a work cover, some sort of difficulty with their voice. And I'm also a mother of two. My kids are 12 and 10.
Excellent.
So that's sort of a little bit about my statistics, I suppose, but I'm really passionate about communication, mainly because I feel when you have positive communication with your audience, with your business colleagues, with your family, with your friends, then that's where you can really enhance your connections and your relationships with people and take what you want to say to the next level. And so often, you know, we have varying skill levels in communication and other areas. So I'm really looking forward to having a chat with you about sort of, you know, things that your listeners can do to they communicate with their community.
And that is key, like communication. We all have, you know, self-doubt about speaking publicly because we don't like the sound of our voice. We don't think we speak eloquently enough, or, you know, it's not comprehended, where we can't get the words out in a comprehensive way. So to build self-confidence in your speaking is a great tool, and definitely your service in providing that resource is very much a sought after for a lot of people that do
and
have
I,
that
I
lack of
self-confidence. I initially got into it because I was a bit of a drama queen at school. I really enjoyed that performance side. But then as I sort of got closer towards the end of high school, I realised that I perhaps needed to have a bit of a backup plan for being an actress, and so went into speech pathology, you know, as a way of still sort of keeping my fingers in that communication world. But, you know, from more of that health perspective, I suppose.
And like when we talk about people that have difficulties and they have difficulty communicating because of there's a lot of contributing factors. There's developmental, God, I'm flat out getting my words out today, developmental delays, stroke, brain injuries, learning disabilities, intellectual disabilities, cerebral palsy, dementia, hearing loss. That's another big one, isn't it? Hearing loss.
Yes.
And as well as, you know, there's a myriad of other problems, but that can affect our speech and language. And a lot of people don't realise that, do they? That actually all those factors do contribute to your voice. And
that's right. And your voice. That's right. So over the years, I have worked across that whole
spectrum,
communication, supporting communication, and you know, I've got that passion on the actual voice, on how it sounds, how you can use the volume, how you can make it sound rich and full, or versus sort of weak and squeaky. And as you said, there's such a variety of issues that can contribute to having voice difficulties. And one of the things that we're finding, you know, the last 18 months, of course, is having to wear these lovely masks all the time, and people are sort of feeling that strain on their voice instead of sort of using their whole vocal system really effectively.
So do you want to just explain that to us a little bit more now, or do you want to look at that later? Your mask you just picked up. So what can we improve with ourselves in our speaking when we're wearing our masks?
Well, there's a whole sort of range of research that's been happening as well around what kind of masks is going to be more effective if you need to be heard, and so from an environmental perspective, I particularly like the cloth masks because you know that you can reuse them. However, what I've started to use more of the surgical masks, because what happens when you're wearing a cloth mask is that you generally the cloth will be very, very close to your lips, and what happens is it muffles the sound. So instead of hearing the word muffle, you might think, did she say muffin? What, you know, and so you get this confusion between words. While with the surgical mask, even better, you know those ones that look like a duck, the duckbill mask?
Yes.
Yes. And they've got all this space in front of your lips.
Mouth.
So you can articulate and enunciate perfectly, but what happens is it gives you lots of space for your lips and your tongue to move and not be impeded by the material touching it. That's right. So it's not so much the volume that's the issue. It's the clarity of what you're saying that is impacted by the mask. So if you do need to be, speaking with a mask, then going for your duckbill type one or your surgical type mask is the way to go compared to your cloth mask. Mm. Yeah. So some things like I said, I've already said enunciating and really over articulating. You think you're, overdoing it, but for the person who's listening on the other end, they just hear a nice clear sound flowing down a little bit. That helps the listener as well. So there are those couple of little, just those little things that you can change about slowing down and over articulating that will help the listener be able to hear what you say a little bit more clearly. Yeah. And so then you don't have to repeat yourself as many times.
And that opens the mind then when we hear you talking about that, because I know I get frustrated when I can't speak properly behind the mask and, and then reciprocating when you're trying to listen to someone speaking, you're saying, oh, can you say that again, please? You're trying to actively listen the second time around rather than doing it the first time and only having to do it the first time. But, yeah, so that definitely creates a clearer picture in the mind of how we need to speak more. Mm. What's the word? What did you say?
We can articulate or enunciate.
Sounds wonderful.
Be like my lady. It doesn't mean that you have to change your accent and sound like my lady, but it's just more about, sort of making sure that you are being really sort of clear with how you pronounce. So that, it's a bit easier to be heard on the other side of that mask.
And that also contributes to like your reading ability, doesn't it? When you're, reading and writing and listening and speaking it, they all work in together. So when you can hear, when you can speak and you listen and you read, they all work together and your whole persona then lifts up, especially if you've got confidence in all those abilities.
Exactly. Communication is in those different modalities, as you say. There's the speaking, the listening, the reading, the writing, and then there's also the non-verbals that we often forget about, that at least 75% of the message that your listener gets is from your body language, your facial expression and the tone of your voice. Mm. So that's a really important thing to think about, particularly in interviews, in online meetings, things like that. That it's not how you say it. It's not what you say. It's how you say it.
Mm.
Exactly. That's right. One thing that I thought might be quite relevant to raise in that when we're talking about different modalities of communication. As someone, I still do work in schools and I work with high school students, and a lot of the students that I work with have difficulty with understanding language. So English is their first language, so difficulty with understanding language, difficulty with reading, difficulty with writing, and just with some of the higher level language where, like, you might be on a work site and there's lots of jokes that are word-based jokes where there's all these double meanings, and some of those jokes might just go over your head. A lot of the high school students that I work with, they choose more practical job avenues because they have struggles with those areas. So just to address the fact that a speech pathologist can work with you to help you develop those areas, particularly when you're on the job site, you need to be able to follow instructions, follow the manuals, follow the health and safety information that's being provided to you. And if you're with understanding, listening, explaining, reading or writing, then there is help available to help you access that on the work site as well.
Yeah, and that's right. It opens up so much more or it undoes those barriers, doesn't it, when you correct all those. So
yeah, that's right.
Now, I understand that you've experienced some challenges with your own voice. So can you tell us about those and how you conquered those challenges and came to find your voice?
Yeah, so when I was in primary school, I myself felt like I was a slow learner and I was often afraid to speak out to ask for help had trouble interacting with other kids who were in my friendship group and circle and would feel like I was on the outside. And I was the younger end of the kids in my grade. I had started sort of early and I ended up being repeated as well. And confidence-wise, I felt like, oh, well, you know, obviously I'm not smart enough to be able to keep up with the other students. And I ended up, when I was doing work, I would not only not ask for help, but I would also lie about, oh, this person stole my work.
Oh.
Because, you know, I was too afraid to ask for help for how to do it. And there are ways where obviously you can get support from your school team, but there are other ways your confidence as well. And for me, it was by engaging with speech and drama, where it was a very small sort of, you know, supported environment where I was doing lots of practice and repetitions of reading and speaking aloud, and then having the opportunity to perform. And then that took the next step to when I got into high school and I started to do more drama theory. Well, then it took me to practicing my writing skills as well. So by having one area that I felt really supported in and passionate about, then I started to that confidence started to spread through other areas of my life, and being more confident in myself to speak out and to realize that, oh, I can learn and I can join in and participate in conversations and not always be five steps behind and joke along with everybody else.
Yeah. And I know that used to be such a big thing. Like when I was in primary school, I actually did verse speaking and did it throughout all of primary school and into, I think, the first 2 years of my high school. And that was, as you said, like repetitive, just practice, 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 and then getting up on stage. And usually it would only be, you know, to the adjudicator, there'd only be two or three in the room. You weren't even speaking in front of a big room majority of the time. And it did. It was, you know, it was great for me back then. I don't know whether the schools still offer that now, because I don't have school age children. They're both grown up now. So I don't know. Is that still practiced in school these days?
Well, what I think is offered as options for students to feel comfortable in however they are able to perform orally is the option of, okay, we're going to, you know, do this oral to the whole class, or you can come and present it to the teacher with a group of your friends if you need, you know, if you
back
need
up, yep.
Wingmen beside you to lift you up, or you can do it by yourself, or you can also at home pre-record your performing if you have stage fright that's so crippling that you are, and that's the great thing about technology now, isn't it, that, you know, we have all of these options to be able to show what we know in lots of different ways. And I think that's probably another really good take home for, you know, if you've got listeners who do have difficulty with reading or writing. Obviously, when we've got our phones, there are these fantastic adaptations on the phones where we have the speaker loud. What you say directly into your text message, or read, you know, you highlight and it will read aloud anything that you see on the website for you. So it's, you know, technology is really providing a much more inclusive way to, you know, engage with literacy and communication in our workplace. It's great.
And it is. It's phenomenal what technology does, and I'm technologically challenged at the best of times, but I love learning about it. I love learning new technology, but yeah, it's it can be an absolute nightmare when it wants to. But when you're saying that as well, and like look at the advancement, we can actually learn different languages with these apps. So to be able to speak a different language, and isn't that bizarre where people have difficulty in speaking English, they can actually speak another fluent language, like another language very fluently. So, you know, the role of the tongue and the pronunciation of words just is, it comes naturally for other people to.
It's fascinating with second language learners or culturally and linguistically diverse learners that, you know, you can not only, you can have a really solid first language and then learning English as a second language. Mm-hmm. In the olden days, you know, parents were told, no, stop using your home language. They just need to learn English now. And that's not the case anymore. We know that if you've got a really strong first language then it's much easier to layer and match the second language on top of that. Mm. Otherwise, you have this broken first language and a broken second language. And as well as all of sort of the cultural loss of community that you can lose through not speaking home language as well. So
that's right.
And that's certainly a message that we give at schools about, you know, keeping home language alive is really important for learning English.
And my in my own family, we've got a new grandson, and he is, his mother is Norwegian. So we are, you know, he's going to be very lucky. He's going to speak Norwegian and English. And my daughter-in-law speaks to him in Norwegian now. You know, he's 5 months old, and I'm trying to pick it up, and like we've been trying to learn for years now. But I think that's fantastic. I think he's just so lucky.
What a gift!
It is going to be a gift to be able to have a second language from birth that he is going to recognize, understand, comprehend, and actually speak as well as English. I think we should all. All the kids up today in our society, because we are multicultural, we should all be teaching the children, you know, second or third languages to be
inclusive
around not only here in Australia but around the world. Yeah.
Having said that, you referred to when you were looking at talking about the overview of, you know, reasons why people might have a communication difficulty. Some people will have developmental language disorders where learning the vocabulary and the grammar and the complex sentences of English is really hard. Or perhaps they've had a brain injury or a stroke or something like that, where, again, you know, just English by itself becomes really, really difficult. And this is the types of things that we might see when we're having conversations and people aren't getting the jokes that have words because they only know maybe the really simple, you know, vocabulary and haven't been exposed to sophisticated, nuanced words. That's right. Just through lack of experience and exposure. So, you know, there's this whole sort of there's this whole area of when we're talking with our colleagues, I suppose, and being mindful of what our own bias is in our own experience, and not necessarily judging other people for if they don't understand what language we use, but knowing that, you know, there are always ways that we can explain things differently or more simply. Yeah. Mm. Yeah, that's right. So, you know, lots of us are practical and visual learners, particularly if, you know, we're in a trade sort of.
And that's right. Everyone has their own learning manner and how they comprehend, how they take in information, and whether it's, you know, hands or whether it's voice, whether it's active listening, whether it's writing, it's, yeah, everyone's individual in those circumstances, but when they build on those skills, they will actually build on all of those other abilities. So
exactly. Really interestingly, with the term dyslexia, at the moment, is there's a lot of new research about how to teach reading and spelling, and the whole education system is having quite a large shake-up at the moment about the way that we teach, because there are so many students and people in the workforce who, you know, struggle with reading what they need to do for their job.
That's great to hear, because dyslexia has been such a taboo thing, hasn't it? It's been treated as a disability for how many years? Mm. It hasn't been addressed in the education department. It's not addressed in community, you know, it wasn't, whereas now it is becoming very prolific and they're doing a lot more work with it and research with it. And it's great to see. And I know quite a few ladies within networks that I'm members of that do suffer from dyslexia and are very big advocates for education of it. And yes, it has been a struggle for many, many years. And especially
and I think lots
when
of
they
people
are at school,
perhaps,
isn't it?
Yeah. They've perhaps gone through, you know, this sort of older way of, there's this sort of, you know, older way of teaching reading, and, you know, now that we've sort of got
more resource,
I think that it's important to share that with people who have left school, to go, you know, there actually is for you to learn again. Yeah. It's not a done deal that, oh, I will, you know, I have this diagnosis, it won't ever happen. You know, we actually know more about what's the most effective way to teach reading and spelling. And I know a lot of people out there might be going, why is a speech pathologist banging on about reading and writing? Oh. Isn't that a teacher thing? there's this really interesting, there's this great model called the simple view of reading. And on one side is language. You need to understand the language. You can't just I could read Spanish, but I wouldn't understand it. Therefore, it's not reading as a whole. So one side is language, and that's something that, you know, speech language pathologists have a specialized skill in. And then in the other side of that model is the decoding side. And right at the foundation skill of being able to decode a word is being able to hear the sounds, say the sounds, and sound it out. And speech sounds, again, is an area that speech pathologists
and Spanish
know a lot about.
Yeah. Spanish is a good one you mentioned, because I learnt Spanish, basic Spanish, back in 2017 and 18. And it's exactly as you say, it's by sight, it's by sound. It's by the male and the female representation of words. Mm-hmm. And it was at first very hard to get around, but I'm quite happy that I learnt basic, and I can have a basic conversation. But it is, and as you said, associating the prefixes, whether they're male or female, and the words and the pronunciation of vowels and
all of those parts,
rolling your tongue
and all of the rules.
Yes.
So once you crack that code, then you go, oh, I get it. Mm. And that's what know, what can be the difficulties that people have is that they haven't had the code explained clearly.
That's exactly. And how empowering for someone that's suffered from dyslexia for all their life, and to have this resource now and coaching to say, hey, we can help you. Let's see how we go and guide them through that.
It's so rewarding.
Definitely.
Really rewarding to see those people. Yeah. Mm.
All right. So in your role as a speech pathologist and a voice coach, I think we've been talking about this anyway. So what are the main areas of therapy, and what interests you the most in that field?
Well, so, yes, we've just talked, you know, some about language literacy. I think what I've really liked to the path that I've gone down privately because of my passion is the voice and how it sounds, and being able to think about that you want to use the way that you breathe and your tummy muscles nice and loud. I know that if we're on a really loud job site with lots of background noise, we can't have this really thin, weak, high, squeaky voice. We're just not going to be heard. It's not going to be strong, and we're not necessarily going to be taken seriously either. So concern is that when people are trying to be this sort of use a loud, strong voice, is that they wrongly can push from their throat. And if you ever feel pain or strain around your throat, then you're not doing it right. Okay. Right. Mm-hmm. Essentially, we should be, instead of using these teeny tiny muscles that we have in our throat, we should be using our really big
diaphragm,
which are often hidden, but they're there. and using that to control the air out to be louder. Mm-hmm. And then the other area that I work with for people to sound really loud and have that rich sort of quality, people say, voice for kick-ass radio, is that rich resonant sound. And resonance is when you use the space in your head. Some people say, oh, I've got a lot of that.
the space and we do sometimes. Like
so when you're in a cave and you say, hey, and it echoes back, you're not making a really loud noise. What happens is the reverberation on the space, that's what amplifies the noise. And so I work with people, any type of people who need to be public speaking or to be speaking to a crowd, to go, okay, how are we incorporating your breath control and your resonance so that you get that loud, powerful, confident sound without injuring and hurting your throat? Yeah.
Yeah, all right.
So that's something that I really love.
Yeah, definitely a lot to learn there. Yeah. So language disorder, articulation disorder, like their speech sound, fluency disorder, stuttering, feeding or swallowing. So that was something interesting when I was like doing a bit of research for this, the swallowing disorders. So where does that come about from? So is that from the esophagus? And
well, so basically a speech pathologist studies everything from here, you know, everything in this space. So, and that includes swallowing. So, you know, when I'm doing work around the voice box, around the larynx, when you're making noise, your vocal cords or your vocal folds, they vibrate together. But when you breathe, your vocal folds open so that the breath can flow through that space. And well, when we're swallowing, we don't want liquid or food to go down into our lungs. So we want to make sure that our vocal folds are closing nice and tightly, creating a seal. And sometimes if you've had a stroke or nerve damage, Parkinson's disease, you know, things like that, you can actually have an impact on your swallowing because of the structures in your throat. Okay. So, there
can be a lot of trauma there. Yep.
Yes, you can. That's right. So, speech pathologists are able to do swallowing assessments as well. And there's a lot of that with speech pathologists who work in hospitals and in aged care facilities as well, you know, making sure that people are still able to manage their food really safely continue to be healthy. Yeah. And in situations, for example, where people might have something like Parkinson's disease or motor neurone disease, something like that, where people notice the sound of their voice and sort of the changes in their body, actually what often can be the issue that they have the most difficulty dealing with is swallowing, which can lead to liquid and food going down their lungs and causing aspiration pneumonia.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so yeah. it's quite a dangerous thing to think yeah, want definitely. To you know mm. have someone you know monitoring and keeping on top of. Yeah.
Yeah. All right then. Yeah. Well, I never. Yeah.
Yeah.
lots to learn there. So introduce us to your business, aptly named Bayside Voice Centre, and tell us what kind of services you provide at the centre.
Well, so at my clinic, I am able to work with you one-to-one, either face-to-face or via telehealth. Of course, that's been of a silver lining, I suppose, we can, you know, out of the pandemic. Is that, you know, we're able to connect with people, you know, in more rural and remote areas who would not have had access to a speech pathology service before. Yeah. So I work one-to-one with people generally who have a particular goal or they might have a particular problem that they want to fix and achieve. But then I also do workplace training for groups of workplaces where their employees either are at risk of developing a voice disorder, for example, a group of gym instructors or teachers or a group of public speakers to go, okay, this is how to care for your voice and prevent any issues because you're at risk. And also, you know, we can do more in-depth training, I suppose, for people who don't necessarily have that at-risk profile but who want to take their voice to the next level because part of their job is interacting with clients and colleagues and they want to sound that little bit more professional or, you know, achieve something for a particular presentation, something like that. That's more the vocal coaching side of things. There's a lot of breadth and it's something that I feel really about and really blessed to be able to. And you'll notice that I'm having lots of water all the time because I mentioned to Joe as we started that is the first rule of voice care is hydrating your vocal cords regularly.
I did say, have you got a glass of water ready?
Yes, that's right. If you think about when your lips or hands are dry in winter and they get all dry and cracked, well, it's a little bit like that your vocal folds are a little bit like that as well because they rub and vibrate together millions of times. You want them to be well lubricated and not have any friction. Otherwise, that's when you can develop things like vocal nodules, stuff like that. So keeping on top of your hydration is really important. I'm not one to say don't drink alcohol or don't drink coffee, but they do dehydrate your vocal cords. So if you're going to do those things, make sure that you're balancing with your water as well.
And we'll delve into that a little bit deeper because that's going to be my next question actually is how we can best train our voices. So we'll have a little break, listen to one of the show's sponsors, and we'll be back to continue on.
Hey, Glowgetters, have you heard about Kick-Ass Women? Founded by Jo Sainsbury, Kick-Ass Women is dedicated to empowering and supporting women who are considering a career change into an industry role. Visit our brand new website at www.kickasswomen.com.au or follow Kick-Ass Women on Facebook and LinkedIn today to keep up to date with all things Kick-Ass Women and the incredible opportunities and content we have for you. See you there, Glowgetters.
Thanks for tuning back in and we are chatting. And we're chatting using our voices to Jenny Matthews, speech pathologist of Bayside Voice Centre. So welcome back, Jenny. Now, let's jump to our main focus. When it comes to our voices, how best can we train and educate our voices to prevent vocal damage, and what does voice therapy enhance?
So voice care, the number one rule of voice care is hydration. So everyone should be regularly have it taking around their bottle of water so that they can make sure that their vocal folds are nice and lubricated so that, you know, there's no friction that can cause impact damage. Just a little bit like when you're repetitively holding a hammer or learning guitar for the first time and you develop these calluses on your hands and, well, calluses, because instead of having a nice, clear, crisp closure as they come together, then they don't close, and that's where you get this sort of rough sound and quality because, yeah, there's not this crisp, clear closure. So lots of hydration, that's really important. And you can also do that through steam.
Oh, okay.
Olden day thing of putting your head over a bowl of steam.
Yeah, with a towel over our head. We used to do that to clear our sinuses, and, you know, you had the head cold. Yes. Gosh, yeah. So well, it is beneficial.
It is. You can buy ones that specifically go over your nose and mouth directly so that it goes straight down into your throats. But, you know, having a nice steamy shower will help, but not quite as much as if you have one of the ones that go over your nose. So that's the hydration. There are a few sort of red flags, I suppose, that can put you at more risk of having a voice difficulty. And so some of those things are if you've got a respiratory disorder like asthma or COPD or COVID, if you have long COVID, where it doesn't just go away after 5 days, but it, you know, sticks around. When we're talking, the power of our sound comes from our breath. So if you have an underlying respiratory difficulty, breathing difficulty, then that can flow onto your voice. Okay. Another area where at least 50% of people who have a voice difficulty also have underlying reflux. So if you think about, you know, that feeling of, oh, I've got that feeling of acid and burning in my throat. Well, the tissues in your throat are really delicate. And if you've got acid sitting on them and eating away at those delicate membranes, that can cause damage that you end up hearing. The sound of your voice can be affected.
Okay.
And so breathing, reflux, and what was my other thing? Oh, good. And another thing that might be relevant for our listeners is also any type of irritant. It could be dust. It could be chemical. It could be smoke. It could be anything that is being inhaled or affecting and sitting on the tissues of your throat can impact on the health of your voice as well. So these are some underlying issues that when, you know, we look at, oh, my voice has changed and it's lasted more than 10 days, you should always have a chat with your doctor saying, for any reason, if your voice change lasts for more than 10 days, is there anything we need to rule out, or it's time to actually go to an ear, nose and throat doctor, and they put a little camera down and have it and check out. So I've covered, most of those things. I think that the last thing is probably shouting where we're pushing from our throat, like I mentioned a little bit earlier, instead of shouting, pushing from here. And you can even see my, that really hurts.
Drying.
You can see my throat muscles go pushing from here. And it gets so tense. And that's really dangerous. So instead of using those tiny muscles, we want to use our big tummy muscles to control the sound.
Yeah. And the volume. And when you're highlighting that, that definition there, you think of, you know, when people are in conflict situations and all that pressure is, you know, it's exuding from that area, isn't it? The veins and the throat's pumping. So
I'm so glad that you raised that, Joe, because that is exactly what happens in those situations where you feel conflict, tense emotion. What's happening at this level is your little caveman brain pops open. You're not thinking logically anymore. Your little caveman brain pops open.
The club out.
And essentially goes, ah, I'm about to be eaten by a tiger. I need to protect my body. And what happens here is that your vocal folds close so that, you know, you don't get anything going down the airway. And also the muscles above them start to close as well. And you know how people say, oh, gosh, I have this choking feeling? Mm-hmm. True. That is physically what's happening because your body is reacting in a way to protect the airway from anything going down the wrong way. Exactly. So there are ways of releasing that tension. So would you like to hear about some of those so that when you're in those freak out situations, you know how to override the caveman response?
We definitely know. We definitely want to know about that. But before we say that, I just want to say when we're working in industry, when we're talking about ingesting, you know, like that's why PPE is so important when you're working within the industry. If you're working in those dust pollutant areas, especially like we have the coal dust, then you have, what about painters, you know, the fumes, auto refinishers, panel beaters, they have highly toxic environments they work in, and they, you know, and you kind of resonate with people that you know that work in those industries, and I'm thinking about their voices now, thinking, yeah, well, they probably haven't used the, you know, PPE all their working career, but
no, that's right.
The effects of it now, and there's so much more that can affect, you know, their lungs and everything else that filters down through that airway. It's
exactly, yes, that's so right.
The PPE is very
important. your stonies, people like that, you know, where plasterers, all of that,
So yeah, so definitely. Now tell us how we can manage our conflict.
I'll tell you the
situation.
Okay. So essentially what you're wanting to do is to open your airway back up. Okay, because it's slammed closed. So the first way and the most obvious way is to just breathe. And you go, yeah, I'm stressed out. I can't just suddenly tell myself to breathe.
So we need to just calm
down.
There
are a couple of ways. That's right. So you can do, you know, either the short, sharp breath through the nose, because anytime you do a short, sharp breath, it's forcing your airway open. Okay, so if you're not necessarily in the middle of everybody, you know, you're about to go on stage, if you're about to do a presentation, you're about to go into a meeting, that mind breaths where you're actually opening, you're forcing your airway open in a really fast way that makes it be automatic. That's one way of doing it. Another way, which is really very socially acceptable, and you might have little flashbacks to your verses on stage, is where they always say, smile, everybody. Mm-hmm. Now, we get this flow down effect where we're relaxing muscles below the smile as well in our throat. So when you're on stage in a choir and they're telling you to smile, it's not only because it looks pretty, it's also because they're wanting you to open your airway you know, and allow the air and the voice to come out really smoothly instead of in a really tight, tense way. So a way that I explain it is called the silent giggle, where you're having this private joke and you do this little This little silent laugh to yourself.
That's a good little.
You might think about that you feel like a bit of an idiot, but
that's it. Yeah, that's a great little tip.
A little giggle to yourself. More socially appropriate. So you might feel like smiling before you're about to go on, but that also tells your brain, "Oh, I'm safe. Okay. I'm happy." Mm. Your brain doesn't know if it's fake or not. Yeah. It believes what the body's doing, so it starts to release that tension as well. Okay, so just some of those really
excellent little tips,
obvious tips about smiling and doing those short, sharp breaths to, you know, open your airway. That they are things that will override that caveman response of your brain trying to shut you down.
And that's really a great, it is a great analogy anyway, because it can be said that our voice is the primary link between our mind and our body. So with the appropriate mindset and awareness of how to use our voice properly, we can exercise control over how we speak, improve our effectiveness, and do so so much more confidence. So
and there are lots those more little techniques to release tension, but you know that's something that I do more one to one as people, you know, require different techniques to resonate with different people. You know, some people think that the silent giggle, they go, "Oh, that just feels ridiculous. I can't do that." But you know, there's other strategies like stretching or I'll give that a go. All right, you know. the last one that I really like, which is perfect for at the start of the morning or the end of a long sigh, it's when we yawn, embrace our yawn.
I am going to yawn now.
Good. Embrace the yawn. Everyone yawn right now as you're listening, because the whole purpose of a yawn is to get more oxygen into your body, right? And so when you yawn and you feel that actual
intake
of your throat opens up and stretches. So you get a stretch on the inside of your throat and you're releasing tension. It's really lovely. So it's this yawn. Very open, easy feeling sound that comes out. Really nice to release strain.
You'll be seeing everyone going around having their little silent little laughs, the yawning.
Exactly, that's right. So, and with the masks, who knows that you're doing a yawn?
Exactly, that's right. Yeah, it is perfect, yes.
Exactly.
And having the capacity to project appropriate sounds can make a critical difference in the way that we're perceived and the way we're treated. Like we said earlier, you know, when used effectively, our voice can work in our favour and enhance our personal and professional relationships in all manners. So
yes, definitely. I actually asked my husband last night about, you know, talking to you today about, you know, females in the workplace, and his feedback was, which I thought was very apt, was that, you know, you want to come across as confident.
Yes,
good. This is what I want to. And you don't necessarily want, you don't want to play the gender card.
No.
But you do want to show that, you know, you're working hard and that's building your respect, but pretending to be to know everything, that's what, you know, can get you unstuck. So that, you know, building the relationships with people where you can show that you can ask for help and say, you know, "Oh, I'm not sure about that. I need to get back to you," that honesty and it's not about losing your femininity. I think it's about showing that you trust your own knowledge
ability,
and skills to be able to stand your ground. And I think that's one thing that I really wanted to sort of just share as well, is around that spectrum of conflict.
Yep.
People who are passive, assertive, and again, if you've got people in your workplace who may have not have great language skills, may not have great social skills, and are very practical learners, and how they interact is very, you know, hands-on, and they can tend to be that blow-up type, aggressive, and use their body to intimidate and their volume to, you know, to get their message across. And they might be, you know, those types of people who might, you know, blame or accuse or deflect things because of their own discomfort of that, I'm not understanding what she's saying to me, so I'm just going to mask that and, you know, get all, you know, I'm gorilla, hear me roar. But, you know, it's important that we do, as women, develop those communication skills so that we can simply, in simple vocabulary, so that everyone's understanding our message, get it across in it using that strong voice. It's okay that afterwards you go to your trusted mate and have a bit of a meltdown.
Down, yeah.
That chicks do that too.
And it is, it's about standing in your own ground, having the confidence and using your voice and not being overconfident and not being afraid to ask for help, and all of those combine into being your authentic self. And you need to earn respect. Can't just be given. So when you're in that situation and environments, you do need to keep it real. And when everyone else around you sees that you are real and you are putting wanting to learn, you have an interest in what you're doing, it plays so much.
Very powerful.
It is very powerful. And
people who are more passive, I suppose, who haven't found their confidence yet, you can hear it in their voice.
You can
see it in their body language. Remember I said at the start, it's not about what you say, it's about how you say it. People who are passive, their whole body and their face are literally hiding because they're giving off that vibe of being afraid and not being confident. So it all comes back to, you know, your standing tall, you know, shoulders back, anchoring your back muscles, doing literally a Wonder Woman pose.
Holding your ground, yes.
There actual research shows if you stand in a Wonder Woman pose with your legs apart, hands on your hips for 2 minutes, your brain feels more confident and able to, you know, conquer that meeting. You know,
and that is true, because I have read an article about that, and they promote that to do the Superwoman pose. Yes, that's right.
Exactly. That's right. So, you know, if you're feeling nervous before you're about to do something, stand in your Wonder Woman pose, have a bit of a giggle to yourself, your silent giggle, you know, smile, and then go out there and smash it.
And you've just answered my next question, actually, because I was going to say lots of how can we calm those nerves when it comes to presenting to a group, public speaking and the likes. So you said that a little bit earlier, like do those, practice those little tips that you shared with us, the yawn and the sneaky little laugh. And
That's right, the private giggle.
The short, quick breaths. All that does contribute, and like consistency makes a big difference, doesn't it? When you're practicing that, especially and consistency, practicing builds our confidence because we get confident in our ability to do it better each
time. It becomes more automatic.
Yeah.
So you don't have to think about that part of it anymore. You repeat something. Exactly. Just like, you know, if you're when you're building something, the more often you've done that motor movement, you don't have to think about it so much, and you can work on actually tweaking it to, you know, be exactly how you want it to, rather than actually the process of it. You know, you don't have to think about that so much. So, but keep in mind as well that if you do have that stage fright, that having that honesty with people as well about, look, I'm really uncomfortable speaking to this enormous group. Is there actually a way that I can do this in an alternative way? Because there are some people out there where you can do all this confident building and it's more of a you know, a psychological thing as well, that they
overwhelming. Yeah, if they go and stand out in the center stage and there's 200 people in front of them, the overwhelm can be just absolutely a bore.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So, you know, having a team around you that, you know, you can have to support you is really important. No one does their job by themselves in a silo.
No, that's right. So lots of people think a change in their voice is just something they have to accept as part of their job or aging. So is that true? Like,
no. And I think as women, we are actually most at risk when we are coming back from to work if we've been on an extended period of leave. Mm-hmm. It might be due to illness, it might be due to maternity leave, whatever. We build up this vocal fitness and we do our job for years and years and years without an issue. We have a big break. It might even just be, I've been on a long service leave, 3 months holiday. And then I come back and, you know, I'm back in the background noise. I'm having to shout and I'm having to do meetings all day long. And it's what happened? I didn't do anything different. And it's that we've lost this vocal fitness. So there's vocal fitness, but also as we age, we do tend to lose some of the elasticity of our skin and muscles, don't we?
And that's natural progression, isn't it?
Yes, that's right. It is a natural progression. So as we age, we can think about the classic old lady voice. What's happened is instead of our vocal folds crisply coming together to vibrate, they're a bit floppy and they're not closing properly, and we've got this air coming through instead of the closure of our vocal folds. So and again, with your as you age, there's the change of how your voice sounds, but we tend to use our voice less. So it can be a use it or lose it type skill as well. So there are particular approaches that I have done specifically for the aging voice. One is called Forte, which is specifically for seniors who I'm too quiet and it's, you know, I can't even talk on the phone to my regular weekly phone call to my anymore. I'm trying to go to the bowl. I'm going to the bowls club and I don't engage in any conversation because no one can hear me. You know, so it affects people's participation as they age. So there are changes, but you do not have to put up with it. Okay. Voice change, as I said earlier, if it lasts for more than 10 days and particularly it's starting to affect your interactions and your function of your job and your and how you engage with your family and friends, there's definitely things that we can do about it.
Well, that's good to know. We can get a bit more longevity out of it, maybe.
Exactly, that's right. Yeah.
All right. So our tone, our pitch, quality of articulation and inflection, they deliver subtle messages about the kind of person we are. So we've said all that. So the better we can articulate, the better we can pronounce and speak, it builds our inner confidence, and that's what we project. So that's what everyone else is going to perceive then, isn't it?
That's right. And I think if you think about sending a text message and you've received something from a person in all caps, like, whoa, that's all very shouty. It's the same with volume. You want to, you know, up and down the volume that you use. If you're just talking in a monotone voice all the time, that's really boring. So, again, you want to use that up and down to give interest and meaning to what you're saying, and emphasis and excitement or suspense. You can use all parts of your voice to change your message and make it interesting and exciting.
Yeah, that's right. And engaging, like draw that person
exactly,
in.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
we don't have to be that person that everyone sits there practicing their yawn and sigh to
and never do anything with it.
Meeting.
So are there any drawbacks to speech therapy? And if so, how would you best describe them?
as the speech therapist myself or as the person coming to see me?
I think as both. What's a view you got on both sides?
From my perspective, I love doing things with people, so it's always all of the paperwork, isn't it? You know, the endless paperwork.
Time consuming.
Things like that. Exactly, that's right. But I think when you come to be probably surprised, well, there's a lot of silly things that I get people to do.
I was going to say,
release tension and practice.
You give homework out, obviously, so it'd be like the next session.
That's right.
Make sure you've practiced
exactly. So you know, people go, "Well, I'm having to do this silent giggle and yawn, and then I'll ask people to do these lip trills and things like that to release tension, and you know, we very quickly build a trusting rapport because, you know.
With silly things.
Exactly. It's a very safe space, you know. I often say, I'm not going to leave you like this. You're not going to keep doing this forever. It's a means to an end. But have lots of fun.
And that's what you want to do, and you want to make it enjoyable so they do actually actively engage in the practice of it, right. So they feel comfortable doing those exercises, and that builds their trust in themselves, in believing that, well, if I do this exercise, so I am going to get a result out of it.
They need to have trust in my knowledge, but also they need to have that trust that, you know, as I said, it is that safe space that we're going to do some silly things, but you know, we're going to also help reach their goal as well.
I think that's the best thing. And that's a great feeling to be able to, you know, let yourself go in those silly moments, because you actually embrace it more, don't you? And you take it in much more in a deeper context of learning then. Mm. So you're just fully relaxed, you're getting into it, into the moment. And
I think because I've, you know, worked over the last few decades in schools, kids, they get bored easily and they don't take any crap either. Mm. You know, you need to actually make it real and make it meaningful for them. So because I have more of a functional approach where I'm, you know, listening to people's goals and what they want to achieve, as opposed to just focusing on a medical model of diagnosis. Yes, that's important, you know, in assessing and knowing what approach to use. But for me, I'm very much led by my client that I'm working with. And if they are happy with that, they think that they've achieved their goal, I might in my mind go, oh, we could tweak this, that and the other. But if they're happy, that's fine. You know, we've achieved their goal. So, you know, I provide the information that they need for their journey to, you know, achieve what they need.
And that's right. And like the goal of speech therapy is to improve the skills that will allow you to communicate more effectively. And everyone's situation is different. So what might work for one person may not work for someone else. It might be a completely different area that you need to focus and build on.
Yeah.
So it's
right. The same diagnosis there's more than one way to skin cat.
Mm, yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
so getting away from that now, I understand you're going to be a soon-to-be published author. Is that correct?
Yes, yes. I have been in the Feminescence magazine that was out late last year and upcoming I will also have a chapter in the book called Dear Inner Child. It goes more into that personal journey of finding my own confident voice as well. Yeah.
Oh, that's excellent. That's congratulations. Exciting. And yes, it's a great outlet. There's another learning thing, like when you can pour it out and write it down, that's great articulation for reading and writing as well.
If you had told 9-year-old Jenny that she would be an author and, you know, telling other people
ways
that they could communicate with confidence. It's been a really lovely journey to be able to come on myself and now model that for my own children and help other rewarding.
It's great. So yes, congratulations, and we'll look forward to seeing that come out, and we'll have to come back to you later in the year and find out all about that and more about it.
Sounds good.
Okay. So is there anything else you'd like to share with the listeners, Jenny? Do you have any special offers or any other advice to hand out to us?
That your voice, who you are, the way that you and your voice is part of your identity. And so if you have voice changes, it's really important that you reach out to your doctor and say, this is something that I'm concerned about and that is impacting my life. I need some support here. And, you know, that, and as I said, there are trained professionals, speech pathologists, who really love voice care, and I'm able to not only see you face to face, but via telehealth as well. So I know last year when I had the Feminisms magazine come out, I was doing a 10% off for anyone who wants to engage with that one-to-one therapy. And if corporate organizations would like training, that I was throwing in staff screening. Complimentary as well. It's nice to know what your staff needs are, and then to be able to risk manage accordingly.
And that increases a good workplace culture by providing and nurturing your staff in those areas as well. And
right.
I know you're very passionate about helping professional voice users and individuals who use their voice in a volunteering capacity, and that's also in like sports coaches as well.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
That's another little area.
I've gone down to my local netball coaching, you know, and done a little voice health care session for the coaches and the referees.
And I can relate to that, because I used to be the footy mum on the side yelling out all the time. I think I needed probably a gag half the time.
A little personal.
Not so much voice coaching.
Yeah, the loud hailer. Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Jenny. It's been a great conversation, and one that's sometimes it's not entered into quite so liberally, because we take things for granted too much, don't we?
We accept things without
question. Yeah.
Yeah, we don't realise the help's out there. So
that's right.
We don't have to take those sore horse voices as
just part
just
of life.
How it is.
Yeah.
No, it's not. You can, you know, get that support. Very much for having me on, Joe. I hope that there's been some practical tips that your listeners have been able to take away from today.
There's been lots of great shares, Jenny. So we thank you again. It's been a great conversation. We'll put your links up in the show notes and on our website for anyone wanting to reach out to Jenny. We say to you, take care and stay safe, particularly in these uncertain times as we still progress through the pandemic. And we look forward to catching up with you a little later on in the year to see how you're going along, and especially with your book. So we'll say thank you very much, and we'll catch up with you later.
Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Joe.
Hey, Glowgetters. Did you know that Jo Sainsbury is a published author for her book High Heels to High Viz, and has been named an Amazon number one bestseller? Telling the story about Jo's transition from the corporate sector into industry, High Heels to High Viz acts as a guide for women who are considering a non-traditional role and career. High Heels to High Viz is available for purchase online at all leading bookstores, including Amazon, Dimex, Waterstones and eBay.
Well, that's it, guys. I do hope you've enjoyed our show and our guests. A very big special thank you to Jenny Matthews of Bayside Voice Centre. Everything that she has shared today is invaluable, and I hope that you have all found the information inspiring, and that it gives you something to ponder and perhaps action over the weekend. If you're having a little bit of voice control issue there, or you're finding that maybe it's something that your children might benefit from. So it can be said that our voice is the primary link between our mind and our body, and we said that earlier. Therefore, with the appropriate mindset and awareness of how to use our voice properly, we can exercise control over how we speak, improve effectiveness, and do so with confidence. Speech pathologists help people with communication and various voice challenges and problems. And speech pathologists often work in a team, as we said, with other health professionals to help people with a range of difficulties. And Jenny is the prime example of speech therapy empowering one voice at a time. As always, I really appreciate you guys giving me your time to listen to the radio show. You can find more information on the episode and Jenny in the show notes or on my social media pages, or visit my website, kickasswomen.com.au. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast to get all the latest episodes sent directly to you. Well, that's it for today's show. Thanks for your company and thanks for listening to Kick-Ass Radio. It's not goodbye, but see you later. Stay safe and well. Keep in touch. Pause comms. Go on, get your glow on. Become a glow-getter.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Kick-Ass Radio, where we kick goals and deliver empowering conversations for women. Want to hear more from Kick-Ass Women and Jo Sainsbury? Visit the Kick-Ass Women website or follow Kick-Ass Women on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Instagram. See you on the next episode of Kick-Ass Radio.